These are the stories that you need to know about today.
My police people are disabled, trying to call a doctor up there. That's why I didn't move.
This happened, what you just saw right there, within the last 24 hours. And it's happening all the time, though. We could have picked a lot of videos. That woman's trying to get to the doctor's office. She gets stuck in a protest, and she's arrested by federal agents. You see, all over America, scenes like this one, like the one you just saw, are making people who live inside of the United States and outside of the United States ask questions about the United States, about what it's doing at home and what it's doing abroad. And if you think those optics are bad, if you think that looks bad, it does. Wait till you see the latest confrontational interview with Bibi Netanyahu. This is the Sanchez effect. Let's do it. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Welcome to The Effect once again. I want to begin tonight not with the protests in Iran, which we covered the day before yesterday, not with the hardships in Cuba and the situation, not with the difficult economic conditions in Venezuela, which we went through yesterday. No, I want to change a little bit, change the focus. I want to begin tonight with America, my country, right? The United States. The U.S., under the direction of President Donald Trump, wants to intervene, as we've been reporting, in those countries, right? In Venezuela and Iran, possibly Cuba, maybe Greenland. Okay. But first, here's the question that I think it's fair to ask. You tell me. Should you not always fix your own backyard before you go around telling your neighbors what they need to do to fix their backyards? Scenes like these you're looking at right there are being repeated nightly in cities all over America. It's crazy. Federal agents looking like special forces units are descending, like they've arrived in some distant war somewhere, on cities to arrest people who may be, they think, in the country illegally. But how do you prove that? It's a daunting task. But they're being confronted. And they're being screamed at. They're being called bullies by American citizens who are coming out of their homes. And they are protesting these types of things. And by the way, it's all kinds of Americans. People of all different colors, people of all different nationalities, mostly Caucasian, by the way. And they don't like what they're seeing in their neighborhoods. They think it looks bad. And they call what they're seeing Nazi tactics. As for the people who are being targeted, right, who they're trying to arrest, these people who are protesting feel like they know those people and they're trying to protect them. They kind of like them. And that's why they're kind of standing up for them. And that's why agents who come out looking for immigrants and they end up arresting the protesters instead. There are videos of this seemingly everywhere these days. And the optics are not good. And with each highly publicized and questionable arrest, tensions across America continue to rise. The idea, right, that helped Donald Trump get elected is turning on him. And it's creating an America like I watched it when I was home in Miami for the holidays. It feels like a slow boil. Look at this. In Los Angeles, 79-year-old man is thrown to the ground. 79 years old. He's an American citizen. He owns a business, a car wash. And when agents arrived at his business, he attempted to show the papers of his workers to prove that they're all legal. And look what they do. They knock him down, throw him to the ground, not once but twice, first inside of his business, and then later when they tackled him outside. The image, right, the image of this heavily armed agents, masked and dressed like soldiers, tackling a 79-year-old man to the ground, this is not winning the hearts and minds of Americans. It's doing the opposite. But the agents are being put in a horrible predicament, too. I mean, they're being asked to go into American communities and look for people who may not be in the country legally. Okay, but how do you do that? How do you do that without breaking the law or violating these people's right to privacy, who they target? You see, in America, there's this wonderful document. It's called the Constitution. And the most important and sacrosanct part of that document says that no one can be searched or detained or seized unless they're first provided with some kind of reasonable cause to show that they have committed a crime. In other words, police can't simply come up to anybody and say, oh, show me your papers, or prove to me, sir, that you're not a criminal. They can't do that. That's illegal. By the way, a little history on this. That law was written into something called the Bill of Rights. It's the most important part of the Constitution, right there at the beginning. Why? Because it's what the British were doing to the Americans that made America become an independent country. Just so you know, side note, the British are still doing that today to their own citizens. The law is meant to avoid scenes like the one that I'm about to show you. This one is really making many, many Americans angry. Watch this report.
Terrified woman flees two men in masks.
Leave me alone!
It's not a mugging. She's an American citizen being chased by ICE agents who think she's here illegally. Jaclyn Guzman says she was born in the USA.
I immediately started telling him, like, I'm born and raised here. Like, I'm a US citizen. And he did not care at all. I was scared.
Who wouldn't be scared, right? She's a young female. She's being chased by two men wearing masks and army fatigues and with guns. She's an American citizen. Her only apparent crime, I don't know, dark skin, dark hair, looking too Hispanic. Again, bad optics, bad optics. And it's making Americans angry, all kinds of Americans. And then just as tensions were rising across the country, it got worse, a lot worse, when this happened.
Here the agents tell the woman to get out of the car and approach the SUV.
No!
The woman then drives forward. That's when the shots are fired, the car crashing.
They are already trying to spin this as an action of self-defense. Having seen the video of myself, I want to tell everybody directly, that is bull. This was an agent recklessly using power that resulted in somebody dying.
Yeah, they killed her. The woman, there she is, Renee Good. She was killed on the spot. She was a mother of three children who had just dropped one of her children off at school. She is 37, or was 37 years old. And like many Americans, it appears she was upset about these ICE federal agents showing up in her neighborhood. Agents say, get this, they say they shot her because she's a domestic terrorist. A domestic terrorist who tried to kill the agents. But when you watch the video, it does show that she was trying to get away, but that's what they asked her to do. Was she trying to kill the agents? I don't think a reasonable person who watches this video would conclude that when she's driving away, she's attempting to kill the agents. And that is why the shooting has shut off such a national debate, one that's making the president of the United States even more unpopular. I've got some numbers I want to show you. Look at this. This tells the story. Look at these numbers. This is a YouGov poll. 47% of Americans now think ICE and these federal agents are making America less safe, not more safe. Only 34% think the agency is making them more safe. As for Donald Trump, bad news. The same poll found that now only 4 of every 10 Americans approve of his job performance. 40% of Americans just don't like the way he's doing his job. Don't like him. Remember, and here's what's interesting. It was a good idea when he got elected, right? He got elected with the promise that he was going to secure the border and arrest, quote, the illegals. But how do you do that? It's complicated. Many of those immigrants are from refugees who came from wars that the United States started. They come from countries we, America, destabilized. And that's the only reason they're in America. Otherwise, they'd still be in their own damn countries. Just like it appears, by the way, talk about destabilizing, that America's getting ready to do again in Venezuela, in Iran, I don't know, Cuba, Greenland. The list goes on and on, right? Also, here's another thing that a lot of people often don't talk about. Many of those people who are being targeted, they're Hispanic, which complicates things because that's a group of people. First of all, they voted for Donald Trump, right? And they're also considered, generally speaking, America's most successful immigrants since the Pilgrims. They're strong on family values. They're strong on hard work. The average Hispanic in America has like two jobs. They commit fewer crimes than most Americans, and they contribute hundreds of billions of dollars to the economy. So that comes into play as well. It's like a nuance thing, right? Nuance is a funny thing. There's one other point I should tell you about when it comes to Hispanics, something that's often not told. We often hear people in America tell Hispanics in particular, because there's like 60 million Hispanics in America, go back to where you came from. Go back to your country. Guess what? Hispanics were in America before the British arrived. Hispanics founded America's oldest European modeled city, St. Augustine. They celebrated Thanksgiving. They celebrated Mass 56 years before the British celebrated their Thanksgiving on Plymouth Rock. Again, this stuff is complicated. And most of America used to belong to Mexico. Nuance. It's a funny thing. Speaking of bad optics, then there's Israel. In a very short period of time, Israel has turned itself into the most disliked country on the planet, and by far. It did so by its over-the-top response to October 7th, right? And its outward hatred in general for all things Palestinian. In reality, all things Muslim. And we've discussed this on this show. And you've seen me tell this directly to Mr. Netanyahu's own advisor, who came on this show. But to see my same words told to the prime minister himself, right to his face, and then to watch him, to watch his face as he's being scolded like a school child, that's something I think you need to see. So here it is. This is Zanny Min-Bedos. She's the chief editor at The Economist, a good newspaper. And you know what? She deserves props for this.
You know, you've been accused of being a war criminal. If you went to go to several countries in Europe, you're going to get arrested. This is not just mad campus radicalism. This is a feeling around the world. You said it yourself to us just now. In public opinion around the world, Israel is doing very poorly. And it's doing very poorly because people see a country that is behaving in a way that is not compatible with being a liberal democracy. And therefore, I think you have a problem. I think that loss of public opinion, what struck me from your autobiography was how subtly and for how long you have understood this. You know that political power comes from public opinion, and you know that you need to win the battle of public opinion, and you're losing it. You've absolutely lost it in Europe, but much more worryingly for you, you're losing it in America. And I think that what you've just told me about fanaticism is true in part, but it is not going to shape public opinion. People are going to roll their eyes and say, he's saying that anybody who says anything critical about Israel is anti-Semitic. He's giving this large, you know, this story about fanaticism. And he's not accepting the fact that Israel is behaving in a way that we think is incompatible with the kind of liberal democracy that he claims.
Incompatible with liberal democracy. She goes on to say that. And she's speaking of democracy there. Right? Or in this case, really, the lack thereof. Let me tell you something. If she were an American journalist doing that to Netanyahu, she would have been fired the next day. Netanyahu would have had her fired the next day if she worked at CBS or CNN or many of those networks. And let me tell you something. I'm speaking from experience. We're going to follow what happens to Ms. Bedos. I'll let you know if she still has her job next month or next year or maybe next week. All right, when we come back, we're going to dive into Mr. Trump's policies, both domestic and foreign. And joining us to unravel all of this will be KJ Noh. He's a political analyst, a journalist, and a researcher. Stick around. You're not going to want to miss this great conversation I can't wait to have with KJ. What an honor it is to bring KJ Noh into this conversation. He's a journalist, he's a political analyst, he's a writer, really smart guy, by the way. Teacher, specializes in a lot of things, including geopolitics and the Asian Pacific region. But he's an American. He's in San Francisco. And I guess it behooves me to start the conversation with the craziness that seems to be happening in America right now. And you know, KJ, I'm thinking of this because this week we've been doing stories on the fact that America wants to invade again Iran, or is saying it might or will or bomb or whatever. And they say the reason they're doing it is because there have been protests in Iran where people are taking on the government. And I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. You're going to invade a country because people are protesting their government, and I'm watching what's happening in America, our country, your country and mine, and I'm thinking, shouldn't we get our own damn problems fixed before we go somewhere else and start telling people what they should do in their country?
I think you're absolutely right. Pleasure to be with you, Rick.
Always.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You know, the hypocrisy is staggering, and I really don't like to overuse that word, but I think really here we see the hypocrisy just overdone. It's clear, you know, that there is deep dysfunction and deep discontent inside the United States that's showing up as mass protests. Certainly in the case of Renee Good, you know, she was just a woman. She wanted to look out for her neighbors, including immigrants. And for that, she was executed in cold blood. Mm. And now they're accusing her of being a terrorist. I mean, that accusation is rich. The accusation is really a confession, you know. And I think that what we see here is that, you know, as the economy malfunctions and, circles the drain, there is more and more domestic discontent, which is being channeled and targeted against immigrants as a scapegoat. And then we have these large demonstrative, performative actions that are designed to intimidate, and also give the semblance that something is being done when it's all, you know, mystification and,
You know, I got to tell you, I was home for the holidays, and it struck me the moment my wife picked me up at the airport, at the Fort Lauderdale International Airport. I flew into Miami International Airport. And one of the first things she started talking about was that. She said, things are kind of crazy here, honey. I said, why? She goes, well, you know, many of our friends are hiding inside their houses. They're afraid to come out, not necessarily because of themselves, but because they have a family member or they married somebody whose papers are not yet documented, or, you know, the guy who works as our gardener, or the guy who helps us clean our house, or the lady next door who helps our neighbor take care of their children. People are suddenly realizing that it's okay. I guess when they heard it during the campaign, we're going to get rid of all the illegals. Now that it's actually happening, you realize these illegals are your neighbors, your friends, the people who take care of your kids, you know, help you around your house. And now it seems personal. And it's scary, not only to the quote-unquote undocumented people, but to all Americans. That's kind of what my wife was telling me it feels like. Are you seeing that in San Francisco?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, people are intimidated, terrorized. We estimate one half of immigrant families have a family member who is undocumented. So that creates an incredible level of insecurity and anxiety across all families. And of course, as you point out, you know, these immigrants are our neighbors, our friends. They do essential work. You know, the vast majority of the hard work in this society would not be done were it not for immigrants. I mean, think of all the produce, the food that you're getting. You know, who cleans, you know, the offices? You know, who does the construction work? We wouldn't have buildings if it were not for immigrants doing that really hard, difficult work. Not to mention the fact that they're also doing extraordinarily skilled work and extraordinarily difficult, you know, cognitive labor as well, both.
Yeah, they're doctors, they're nurses, they're... You know, and when you really think about it, I mean, you know, we're all immigrants. Everybody came from somewhere. And as I mentioned just a little while ago, and this gets lost on a lot of Americans, the first immigrants who came to Americans really were Asia. Because before America was formed, they all came through through Alaska, the Bering Straits. And that's how it was settled. And then, as far as Europeans go, the first immigrants that came to America were from Spain, not from Great Britain, or were not English. So, I mean, it's not about one group being better than the other. Who cares, right? But it's just that it's not as simple as it seems in America, where you're just going to go in, you're going to get all the illegal Hispanics out of the way, or you're going to get all these people who came from other countries who are now there, especially considering many of them come from countries we intervened in, destroyed, and that's why they're here.
Absolutely, yes. They're here because we destroyed the countries. Nobody uproots themselves and travels thousands of miles on a dangerous journey to settle in a country where they don't have roots, they don't speak the language, where everything is difficult. Nobody does that willingly. It's because there's some kind of catastrophic event, usually brought on by U.S. regime change or war, that forces them to displace, uproot, and displace themselves, and then come here looking for a modicum of, you know, stability. And yet, even under those circumstances, they're very, very often exploited and used. Let's be honest here. They're very, very often exploited. They're very, very often used as a way to discipline domestic labor, that is, to make, to drive, the cost of employment down and to put pressure on people who are working, for example, in unions. And at the same time, they bear all the social burdens, they bear all the social blame, they're demonized and scapegoated in this current atmosphere. And it's unfair on all sides, despite the benefits that they've brought to the country.
Help us figure this out, though. People are watching this conversation you and I are having all over the world, and they're trying to better understand what's really happening in America. So I think, I don't want to speak for you, but I think we all agree that countries have a right to preserve their borders. And if Mr. Trump's idea was we need to secure our border, you're right. We should always secure our border. I don't want, you know, anybody who wants to come to my country who may be dangerous coming to my country. I got it. And if there are people who are in the country and are not legal, and some of them may and are dangerous, I also want them targeted and possibly even removed. It's about the process, right? It's kind of like the helter-skelter way that this is being done. Putting men in uniforms looking like they're going out to Iraq or Afghanistan during the war, wearing masks, showing up in neighborhoods, trying to figure out who may be illegal and who isn't. First of all, my heart goes out to those agents. It's an impossible task they're being asked to do. Of course people are going to hate them. They look like freaking Nazis.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, first, the mask wearing is, are you executioners? Why are you wearing masks? You know, this is not, the Zapatista, army. So no need to wear masks if you're doing things legitimately. But also, I think that we have to understand this as, as empires start to devolve and start to unravel, they become more and more authoritarian. I mean, the common terminology used is that they become more and more fascist. So this is this trend or this movement towards fascism where the rules of the game that you made and the rules that you set are no longer working. And so now you change the rules and you revert to overt violence. And I think this is what we are seeing. And as for the issue of borders, of course, every country needs borders. It needs border control. But we also have to understand that the United States uses immigrants. I mean, it constantly brings in immigrants, imports immigrants, or offsources labor to other countries. And then once having brought them there, it starts to blame them for a host of social ills that are completely detached from the actual facts, from the actual reality. But as I said, traditionally, the whole idea of an illegal immigrant was created right after the end of slavery. You needed a new underclass of people, of laborers who had no rights. And so starting around the 1870s, we saw this category of undocumented or illegal immigrant. And these were workers who could be exploited to the max and who could also be used to discipline domestic labor. And this has been a kind of a constant throughout U.S. history, moving back and forth tightening the, you know, the spigot and then opening it as necessary, depending on domestic labor needs and depending on how much the U.S. wants to control domestic labor.
So, you know, it's kind of funny that you and I are having this conversation. When you think about it, it's interesting because it's part of the capitalist dogma, right? The free market thinking. You know, I have a lot of business friends in America. I'm sure you do, too. People who will say, yeah, I'm going to hire the guy who does the most work for the least amount of money. That way I can, you know, support my bottom line. Makes sense. That's the basis and the foundation of capitalism. So when I was doing some investigative reporting working at CNN, I found out that the number of companies in the United States who literally went to Mexico and recruited workers and brought them here to do jobs that they didn't think they could fill for the right price was immense. And the more I looked, the more I found. So in many ways, this problem that we hate is a monster that we created and have continued to feed. But we don't deal with it in terms of punishing the employers. We punish the employees, the people who were brought over. Isn't that a part of the problem?
You're absolutely right. You know, we're punishing, if you will, the victims. The employers are definitely part of it. But as you point out very correctly, that the employers are part of a capitalist structure that seeks to minimize costs of labor. And we know that labor is where value is created. So if you want to increase value, if you want to increase profits, you want to diminish the costs of labor as much as possible. These are structural issues. These are structural factors. And so having set up that system and encouraged people to take advantage of it, now you're going to punish the lowest people on that, on that system, the most disposable. That is, I think that is immoral.
But here's the thing, you know what's funny? Here I am in Moscow, and there you are in San Francisco. You're an Asian American. I'm a Hispanic American. And again, who cares? We're just Americans. We're no different than anybody else there. But you and I are having this conversation, and this conversation that you and I are having involves nuance, the complications of systems, the way people think, the free market. And we're explaining things in a way that a lot of people can start to understand how we got to where we are. You cannot find this conversation that you and I just had anywhere in America. Nobody will have this. It's all so damn simple. There's the good guys, there's the bad guys. You either support the agents because they're all good, and you hate all the illegals because they're all scum, or the agents are all thugs and the poor illegals are all, you know what I mean? Where has the nuance gone? Where's the type of discussion points that you and I'm not that smart, and you are, but I'm not. But here we are having this discussion and we're involving things that need to be said, damn it, KJ. And if you go to America, you're not going to hear this on Fox News or CNN, you know?
Absolutely not. And all the nuance has been submerged, erased, whited out, censored from the airwaves, because these are things that, the system doesn't want you to see or understand. I mean, let's be clear. You know, the United States, it has a superpower. That superpower, of course, is financial, military, but it's also propaganda. We're so deeply caught up inside a propaganda system that essentially it's like being kept in a dark box. You know, that proverbial camera obscura where you're kept in like this dark, dark box. And there's a tiny, tiny pinprick of a hole where the outside world comes in, and that pinprick projects an image onto the rear wall, and that image is inverted. So we're getting an image of the world upside down while the rest of the time we're kept completely in the dark and also fed rubbish. This is the propaganda system at work. And thank God we have outlets like you and other alternative outlets that are trying to bring some critical thinking and some awareness of reality, you know, derive truth from facts, please. But, it's an uphill battle.
I have really smart friends who tell me when I talk to them or interview them that they believe a lot of times this kind of thing happens, that we're seeing these interventions, what we just saw in Venezuela, for example, what we may soon be seeing in Iran, discussion about Greenland, all of these things are really ways to distract from the problems in America. you can think of Bill Clinton. At the time, he was embroiled in horrible controversy, which really wasn't so horrible, but at the time it was a controversy. And all of a sudden, the United States bombs Belgrade, you know? I can give you example of, after example where a president, for example, or an administration's numbers, the approval ratings were way low, suddenly there's a war somewhere. So I'm asking you this question, given what's going on, given what we just saw that's going on in America, given, and I'll show this again, I don't know if you have it, Boris or Gene, put up Mr. Trump's latest numbers, according to this YouGov poll that just came out. I mean, I was kind of floored when I saw this. I thought, you know, I know he might be in the high 40s, but he's down to 40%. There may even be some polls out there that have him at 38 or 39%. I mean, he's approaching Biden numbers now. So his numbers are down. And while his numbers are down, all of a sudden we're talking about new wars. Is that a coincidence?
It's not a coincidence. I mean, of course, the empire always uses foreign adventures to distract from domestic misadventures, domestic crises. But also, it's part of the ongoing bread and circuses. You know, as I said, as the system breaks down, as the, you know, capitalist system reaches its kind of terminal contradictions, it reverts to primitive accumulation, which is, say, naked violence. It steals, it kidnaps, it engages in piracy, it engages in overt war. And rather than the kind of soft power that it was used to, not so soft in certain cases, but rather than, you know, putting a veneer and a PR, well-fashioned PR campaign over its imperial adventures, what it does is it simply, you know, knocks the chessboard over, breaks the rules and says, you know, we're doing whatever we want to because, and as we point out, you know, when you start changing the rules on the game that you made, it means that you are losing the game.
It's
the U.S. is losing the game.
It's interesting you said that. I'm sorry for interrupting, but boy, you made me think of something. You know, Mr. Trump is not doing anything that Mr. Clinton, Mr. Obama, Mr. Bush didn't all do. They all did the same. The only difference with Trump is he actually is more honest about it. He doesn't invade a country and then say it was for democracy. He says, no, I'm going to invade it because I want their oil. I mean, it's crazy, but it's just...
Exactly. Yes, you're exactly. And this is what drives the liberal class insane because he's pulled the mask off. You know, he's just kind of, you know, doing it without the veneer of, you know, lip service to some ideal or, you know, hypocrisy. But essentially, I mean, let's just think about oil. China buys oil. The U.S. steals oil. You know, China bombs. The U.S. bombs. China builds. You know, China supports administrations. The U.S. coups them. China welcomes foreign leaders. The U.S. kidnaps them. I mean, it couldn't be more naked. The contrast couldn't be more naked. And yet, at the same time, you know, we are told that, you know, this is just how the way the world is. The strong do what they will and the weak suffer what they must. I mean, this is not acceptable if we want to have a common future of the planet.
I'm glad you said that because I wanted to talk to you about this. I went to your site this morning and I started reading some of the things that you have written recently. And I was particularly keen on the idea that you're starting to make some kind of comparison between Ukraine and Taiwan, and I think you're possibly on to something there. There's no question to anybody who can see two fingers in front of their face, as my mother used to say, that there was a coup in Ukraine that was brought about by the West, particularly Washington, essentially because they wanted to have a change, which caused that war. The fear now is, and people like you are perhaps suggesting this, I don't know, that the U.S. is getting ready to do the same exact thing in Taiwan, that they're creating the conditions for a situation where it's going to be impossible for there not to be some kind of conflagration in that part of the world between Taiwan and China. How do you see it?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. Taiwan is the critical trigger or the critical provocation that could result in a Pacific conflagration. Of course, there are others. There's Korea, there is the South China Sea, the East China Sea. But Taiwan is the center of the first island chain, which encircles China. And the U.S. has been weaponizing Taiwan for decades. Originally, Taiwan was a military base for waging expeditionary war against China. That was from 1945 until around 1972 to 1979. And then it turned into a hedge and a way of waging gray zone warfare or subkinetic warfare against China. So most of the subkinetic actions were run out of Taiwan province, especially the dirty wars in Myanmar against China, the kind of, you know, ideological warfare was run out of Taiwan Island. For example, the Latin American death squads were trained on Taiwan Island at the Peitu Political Warfare Cadres Academy. They were responsible. They were key factors of the drug traffic coming out of Southeast Asia to fund these dirty wars. That transport of the drugs was done by Air America, which was also known as Civil Air Transport, which is the flag carrier of the Taiwan government. And so there's a deep connection in which Taiwan has always served as a proxy for U.S. dirty wars and dirty operations. Most recently, we can see that in the pager attack, when a Taiwan company produced and supplied the pagers. They say that, oh, you know, we didn't do anything. You know, we just licensed our, you know, brand. But that doesn't make any sense because Israel does not make pagers. And certainly they don't make, you know, tamper-resistant, detection-proof pagers, etc. So Taiwan is up to its ears in complicity with the United States. Currently, the vice president is a new is from New Jersey. She's a Jersey girl, former U.S. citizen.
But here's what's weird, and maybe a lot. Remember, we're in the weeds here a little bit because there may be people watching our show from around the world that don't know this, that Taiwan is a province of China. It would be like Florida or Maryland, I don't know, pick your favorite state, doing these types of things at the behest of Russia or China against the United States. Isn't it? I mean, is that a fair comparison, what you just described?
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. Yes, Taiwan is part of China. All countries on the planet agree that this is the case, including the authorities on Taiwan Island. They still claim China as their territory. It's just a contestation that, you know, that they claim to be, quote unquote, the legitimate government, which the UN doesn't recognize. The legitimate government of China, including Taiwan province, is the PRC, the CPC. And it's as if the Chinese were to weaponize Key West, that they were to turn Key West into a Chinese military base. Would that be acceptable to the U.S.? No, we would see it as a threat, possibly, you know, a declaration of war. Well, this is what the U.S. has been doing for years now. Just most recently, they sent 11, they're sending $11.1 billion worth of advanced weaponry to Taiwan Island in order to provoke war. It's the, you know, it's the pawn on the eighth row, and they know that China cannot ignore this. So this is the trigger. They're in the process of Ukrainizing Taiwan Island, and they're doing everything possible to make that provocation undeniable. And
So teach me something here, because I've always been fascinated by this as a student of history. So if we go all the way back to Chiang Kai-shek, right after the war, and suddenly there's this separation between, I don't know, they called it free China, not free China, communist China, whatever the hell terms you want to use. I don't think they make a lot of sense to use labels. But if China had been left to its own devices without interference from the West, would they have figured that out? Would by now Taiwan and China would have been one, do you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, the CPC fought the KMT. These are the nationalist
names.
My language, they would be the fascists.
Yeah.
And they were incredibly corrupt. And over a period of 2.5 decades, the Chinese fought a peasant war against the corrupt warlords and the fascist KMT, and essentially they voted with their bodies and with their feet, and they defeated them on the mainland, and they were just about to take the last remaining part, which was Taiwan, when the U.S. intervened. And at the time, China only had a land army, so it was incapable of crossing the channel, and therefore they were unable to complete their civil war and complete their reunification. And since then, Taiwan has been used as a thorn in the side of China as a way of agitating, militating, as a forward base, as a constant irritant, with the design that it would be used as a platform to attack China, which is not, which it is now rapidly reverting to.
That's a great explanation. So clear. Finally, let's talk about current events. And I think there's nothing more important right now than Iran, given the fact that the United States apparently tried to use, and Israel, pictures of people who are angry, legitimately angry, and protesting, by the way, because their currency went up 40%. My sources in Iran tell me that the currency was manipulated to go up 40%, which made business owners angry, which then they went out on the streets and protested, just like people protest all over the world. But then the United States infiltrated, pardon me, the Mossad infiltrated those protests and put in people who acted out, shot police officers, and that's how we got where we are today. The United States was trying to use that as a justification for going in and rebombing Iran. So that's where we are. I kind of wanted to draw the picture. Since then, the Iranians have gone out and protested on behalf of the government. Millions of them, apparently, according to some reports, maybe hundreds or tens of thousands, whatever the number is. Do you think that has kind of waylaid the movement that the U.S. and Israel were trying to create to rebomb Iran, and that has at least slowed the process down? Or do you think it is still inevitable?
I don't think it's inevitable, but I think those plans are still there. What it has done is kicked out the pretext that would have been used, that, you know, this is a war of, you know, liberation, we're fighting the good fight, etc. You know, let's be very, very clear here. It was an attempt at a color revolution. Of course, as you point out, people have legitimate complaints against their government, as do all citizens of all governments. But the kind of economic pressures that were built into the sanctions and the, you know, external pressures that were constantly being put on Iran, you know, were used as a pretext. And under the cover of some protests, there was a massive escalation to violence. This is the standard color revolution playbook. You saw this most obviously in the Euromaidan when there were protests. And then protesters were shot and killed, most likely by, you know, the right wing, in order to provoke or to justify, to instigate a crackdown and then to justify further sanctions and escalation. So we see this. This is a kind of off-the-shelf color revolution playbook. And it seems that Iran has diffused this for the moment, because you see massive protests in support of the government and against these people who want to bring down the regime. I mean, my God, who wants Reza Pahlavi back? I mean, this is the Pahlavi dictatorship. They want a monarchy in the 21st century. This is insane.
Yeah.
And yet, what we can anticipate is that this kind of subkinetic warfare will continue, and there's no guarantee that the war will not happen. Although Iran, I believe, is strongly placed to defend itself.
Only in United States media do you turn on the TV and see the son of the most hated monarch in the history of the country being interviewed and treated like he's the expert on Iranian affairs. It's you can't make this stuff up. That's like on CNN, they're interviewing David Petraeus as if he's a genius on war, where he lost every single battle that he fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's like, They just don't seem interested in telling you the truth or introducing you to people who may even be close to the truth. And that's fortunately the story that's taking place. That's what I witnessed when I was home vacationing with my family, and it's something you probably see every day living in San Francisco. KJ, it is such a delight to be able to talk to you. What a wonderful conversation. I learned much from you in terms of what you told us, especially about the situation right now in Taiwan, something that we're going to be following as well. Speaking of follow, if people want to follow you, where do they find you? How can people reach out to you if they want to?
They can find me on various, websites. You can do a web search of my name. And then also, I've just recently released a book called Killing Democracy. It's about the history of regime change that the United States has perpetrated around the world with my good colleagues, Finian Cunningham, Dan Kovalik, Jeremy Kuzmarov, and Ron Ridenour. And so that's, if you want a little bit more depth and history and context, Killing Democracy.
Killing Democracy, catchy title. Interesting, ironic, kind of paradoxical in its own way. Thank you, my friend. We'll look forward to seeing you again, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You know, thousands of you always comment on these shows. You watch interviews like the one I just did with KJ, and you then go to one of the places where I live or my brand lives, and you tell us what you think. And the trend continues, by the way. On our show on Venezuela and Iran interventions, and our interview with Cameron McGregor, which is always an interesting guy as well, Bob says, greetings from France. Excellent show about the world, sad politics today, and President Trump's poor leadership. Thank you, Bob. Pota says, it's good to see you again, Rick. Is it true that Russia is better than Miami? Well, yeah, in some ways it actually is. Gavin Miller says, Rick Sanchez shilling for Putin again. If the Russian armed forces are so great, why do they struggle to beat a smaller Ukraine after all these years? That's a great question there, Mr. Gavin. It's because they're not fighting Ukraine. They're fighting the United States of America, the UK, the French, the Germans. I could go on and name almost every country in Europe. That's who they're actually at war with. And according to most of the experts, they're winning. Kevin Strade says, taking Venezuelan oil and Greenland will not improve the lives of average Americans. You're absolutely right. He goes on to say, it's only going to enrich the billionaire class, the only class that matters to Trump. And then Ginger Peacenik says, Trump is Trump first, Israel second, the U.S. barely on his radar. But wait, I thought it was all about America first, Ginger. Anyway, as usual, all the feedback is appreciated. And yeah, I'm on YouTube. You can find me there. Also, I have a podcast called Journalistically Speaking. Don't hesitate to speak your mind there as well. We get tons of comments. I try to read all of them. Thank you for sharing. You can look for me on X, Rick Sanchez TV. All right, so thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for letting us into your homes. And again, we'll look for you next time.